Shalom Havarim. Hello, friends. Don't talk back to me. You're going to spit those lifesavers right out. Good to see you on this day. It is cooler outside, not yet rainy, but we have had some rainy days. And Sonia and the children and I, we were all camping from Thursday evening through midday yesterday. And if you've ever been camping in the rain, you know it can be a little bit of experience. So people always ask me when we get back from these camping trips, you know, just how is camping in the rain? And I always have one response for them. I tell them that camping in the rain is intense. You got it? Okay. Intense. Okay. Yeah. All right. Actually, though, yesterday, for real, this is a for real story. As I got up in the morning, we take our dog with us when we go camping, which means first light, he is up because he's got to catch that squirrel. He has never caught a squirrel in his life, but he's got to get up when he gets, you know, that sense there's something out there. We got to go exploring. So first light, he and I get up, we leave the tent, and we were at Sharando, so we went to the upper lake, and that's kind of a fishing lake. And we went up there. It's a well-stocked lake. And as soon as we crest that last hill, we see that even though it's just after dawn, there are already a couple families out there fishing. And we start doing our lap around the lake. And have you ever had those moments where you're like proud of somebody else's kid? Now it happens. It's true. It happens. So the dog and I are making our lap, and we're walking past these two who I seem to be assumed to be brothers. One is probably 11 or 12 years old, and there's an older one that's about 16 years old. And they're both getting their bait on their hook, and the younger one says to the older one, he says, "What are you fishing for today?" Now, I have this impulse to respond to this question because I know the right answer. I have been a dad for 12 years. I've been telling dad jokes for much longer than that. I know the right answer when someone says, "What are you fishing for today?" And I had this impulse to tell him the right answer. But I've also learned that sometimes, especially early in the morning, it's creepy when the stranger starts talking to children that are off playing by themselves. So I avoid my impulse to say the correct answer. But as I'm walking by and the younger son says to the older brother, he says, "What are you fishing for today?" Without missing a beat, the older son, 16 years old, says, "Fish." I'm like, "You don't know it, son, but your dad joke game is strong. You're going to do well." "What are you fishing for?" "Fish." Come on now. Tough crowd this morning. All right, so it's too early. We're not going to be talking about camping. We're not going to be talking about fishing. We are going to be talking a little about agriculture. We're going to be talking about grains, and we're going to be talking about storing things up and building barns. And we're going to be talking about some things that are really applicable to our life today. And I realized as I was reading this scripture and as Tate read it again, just how relevant this is today. And I thought about making a modern day parable out of this passage. I thought about writing something about a young man who started a 401k, started saving up a little bit every month. And then after a number of years, he had acquired a sizable amount of money in this 401k preparing for his retirement. And then came a pandemic. And then came a war between Russia and Ukraine. And then came a recession, and God visited this young man and said to him, "You fool, tonight 20% of your retirement funds will be taken from you." I thought about telling that parable, but I thought, you know what? That's too realistic today. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at this story, this parable, and try to understand some of the universal teachings that we find in this passage. And I realize that there are times in the Bible that it's just not applicable to my life. Have you ever had that moment? Like you're reading something, you're like, what am I supposed to get out of this? For instance, I have never once in my life considered boiling a baby goat in its mother's milk. But I know that if I ever had that impulse, I know that that's a no-no. But what are the universals that we can lift out of today's passage? What things do apply? What is still seen? Today we find things like selfishness and greed, ingratitude, and building relationships. We see things like fighting over inheritance, and hopefully none of you have had that firsthand experience. Brothers angry with one another about who gets what. These things are very much relevant for us today. So we're going to look at how to apply this passage, even though you maybe have never tried to build a bigger barn. How do these things still apply to us here today? So we're going to start by looking at the selfishness and greed. All right, so when we look at this passage, it says in my version of the Bible, when I look at the NIV, it calls this the parable of the rich fool. Now, we need to remember that Jesus did not give these parables names. These names were given to them by the later editors who arranged the scriptures in the order that they are in. So Jesus didn't call it this, but we can see where this name comes from. But yet it surprises me to call a rich person a fool, because generally when I think about rich people, I tend to think of people who are rather intelligent. I'm going to put four different people up here. These are probably four richest people in the United States right now. Anybody want to guess? Can you tell me who these people are? Anybody know them? Anybody want to try? Go from the top left corner and go clockwise around. What do you think, Duncan? Who we got? Top left. Who you got on the bottom? Elon Musk, that's right. Bill Gates, right here. He's a little washed out there. Actually, it might be his actual cue. I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg, that's right. And? Jeff Bezos. All right, so Zuckerberg, Bezos, Elon Musk, and Bill. What's his name, Gary?
Gates.
Bill Gates, that's right. Facebook, Amazon, Tesla, and Microsoft. Very rich men, very intelligent men, don't you think? Like, I would assume that these guys did pretty well on their SATs. But the thing about very intelligent people is very intelligent people still make mistakes. Very intelligent people still can act a fool. And I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to now anyway. Like buying major portions of Twitter and then trying to back out of that. That can be a little foolish. I don't know. Not signing prenups might be right up there. People make mistakes. People can act fool. Even if you're very intelligent, still can act foolish. So Jesus tells this story about this farmer. And there's this farmer that is probably a pretty intelligent guy. He's doing all right for himself. He puts out his crop, and at the end of the season, he has just this bumper harvest, like huge amount of grain brought back in. And he realizes that he has so much stuff, so much of this crop, that he can just retire early. We have no idea how old he is, how long he's been doing this, but we are told that he can tear down his barns, build bigger ones, and store the grain that he has harvested and just not work for a period of time. So it's not even just like he's going to fill his barns and he's going to be set for a while. He's got to tear those down to make more space for bigger barns. And after he does all of this, he brings in the harvest, he tears down the barns, builds these bigger ones, he looks out on all that he has, and he says, I'm going to take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. That's in the Bible. Do you know that? That phrase, eat, drink, and be merry. It is biblical. It's not lifted up as a positive thing here, but he's like, I can just kick back and I'm going to be all right. Well, God has a bit of a response to this. God says to him, you fool. That's where the term the foolish rich man comes from. You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? All right, so far so good. And what does Jesus say about this? In summary, he says, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. All right, so you've heard the passage read for us by Tate. You've heard my little synopsis. You've seen these points, like bullet points of the passage. What exactly did the guy do wrong? Like, that's a really hard thing for me. There's several things that we could guess at, and maybe Jesus is trying to point several things out to us, but he just says this kind of blanket statement at the end. It's not real clear just what it is that he did wrong. And the reason that this is a challenge for me is because I think it's actually a good thing to have some savings. I think it's probably a good thing to put some money away for retirement. Now, I know that I'm not the only one with some retirement funds, so I'm probably not alone here. I think it's good to have some money set back in case of an emergency. What if your refrigerator went out tomorrow? What would you do? Actually, I had a friend that posted on Facebook. He had his freezer that he had a quarter of a cow in the freezer. He didn't realize it until it's too late. That freezer was not working any longer. Well, then what do you do? Do you need to go out and buy something new? Well, you don't have any funds. No, it's good to have a little something. What if you lose your job? How are you going to pay your mortgage? So I think about this story about this guy. Is Jesus saying that it's wrong to store anything? Is it wrong to keep anything back? And I even preached on this a couple of weeks ago that I don't think it's wrong, but we need to do so carefully and intelligently and with good stewardship in mind. Now, I know there's some people here that are old school Mennonites. You've been around a while, and I'm not going to point anybody out. I'm not going to look anybody in the eye. But some of you are aware that in the Mennonite tradition, there has been a tendency to take these kind of passages as saying we should not keep anything long term. We should not have retirement funds. And one way that this was applied was in endowment funds. Are you familiar with endowment funds? Endowment funds are when somebody makes a large donation to a nonprofit organization and they keep that amount of money and they invest it and they spend the interest off of that fund. I'll give you an example. So if somebody was to give Stanton Mennonite Church $10,000 as a part of their will, their bequest, rather than using that money and giving like $1,000 out every year using that in our funds, we would invest that money and then we'd have like interest, say 10% interest every year. It's a good interest rate. And then we would have how much money every year? 10% of 1,000 would be, or of 10,000 would be 1,000. We would use that interest every year and still have the principal earning money. So if you were to just give $1,000 out every year, after 10 years those funds are gone. If you use it in an endowment, you have $1,000 in perpetuity as long as it's earning 10% interest. Make sense? Well, organizations in the Mennonite church decided that this was a way of storing up treasures for ourselves on heaven. This is a way of building bigger barns. And some of our institutions, because of that, have very small endowment funds. One place we see endowments is in universities. And if you look at university endowments, you actually can find these numbers online. Eastern Mennonite University's endowment is much smaller than comparable-sized universities like Bridgewater College. Bridgewater College's endowment fund is 4 times as big as EMU's. Because of this literal interpretation of not storing up for ourselves treasure on heaven, not building bigger barns. But I'm not sure that's what Jesus is getting at here. And what I want to do is compare this story to another popular story from the Bible. A story about a man named Joseph. Now, I'm not talking about Joseph, the father of Jesus, but Joseph, the guy with the fancy coat. Remember this one? Joseph in the Technicolor dream coat. No, not that guy either. The coat of many colors. And this story tells us that when Joseph was in prison in Egypt, he was there in prison and he had this bit of a reputation for being able to interpret dreams. And Pharaoh at the time was having some really weird dreams. For instance, one night he had this dream about these 7 fat cows and 7 skinny cows. And the 7 skinny cows ate the 7 fat cows. Totally normal, right? No, they're herbivores. So it's weird to him. He wakes up, what was that all about? He goes back to sleep. He has another dream. He has a dream of 7 fat, plump heads of grain and 7 skinny, withered heads of grain. And those 7 withered heads of grain eat the 7 fat, plump heads of grain. Again, totally not normal, not what you expect. So he wakes up, he inquires, like, who can help me understand this dream? And Joseph has this reputation. He goes to Joseph, and Joseph explains it to him. He says, the 7 fat cows and the 7 plump heads of grain, that's 7 years of abundance. That will be followed by 7 years of famine. So Pharaoh recognizes that God is with Joseph, and he puts him in charge of collecting grain during those 7 years of abundance. They're going to store up this grain. And I'm pretty sure that they had to build bigger barns to store that grain. And then whenever the 7 years of abundance are over, they're able to live off what they have stored up. Now, when Jesus tells this story, this parable of the rich fool, I'm pretty sure that the people that heard him tell the story would have been familiar with the story of Joseph. They were all Jewish people. So what is different between the story of Joseph and the story about this rich fool? Well, the thing that we find with the story of Joseph is that when he stores up all this stuff, he doesn't keep it for himself. That grain that he's been keeping is not just to go into Joseph's belly. It's used for the people. And it's not even just like Pharaoh gets it. No, it's everybody in Egypt comes to get grain. And if we look at Genesis chapter 41, verse 57, we notice even this caveat. It says, all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. All the world, and we can probably interpret that as all the known world at the time. All these people came to Egypt, they heard there was food there, and he gave them grain. Now we can probably be a little critical of Joseph here because he does seem to be selling the people their own grain. And that's a story for another time. But the point that I'm trying to make here is Joseph didn't just keep that grain for himself. He kept it to help others out. Now compare that to what we read from the rich fool. I have some emphasis here. This is the words of the rich fool. He says, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, eat, drink, and be merry. While Joseph used the blessings of God to bless others, this rich fool used it for nobody but himself. Also note that this rich fool decides that, and again, we don't know how old he was, that he's just going to retire. Like, wouldn't you like to be in that position? The guy just has a big crop, and he's like, all right, I'm done working. And he sits back and does nothing. I'm just going to eat, drink, and be merry. But the thing is, the Bible, time and time again, is against laziness. You know, it's not just your dad that says, stop being lazy. God said that too. Proverbs speak about the lazy, and we read again in the New Testament, you know, the man who does not work shall not eat. Now, the Bible lays out that we are to have a time of rest. Sabbath is very important, but so is work. So here this guy is just being lazy. He's like, I don't have to work anymore, so I don't think I will. Now, I think about this guy, and I think if he is young-ish and still healthy-ish, I think about all that he could do to make the world around him a better place. All that he could contribute in the ways that he could help. I'm always really impressed when I hear stories or I see people in my life who retire but don't really quit working. People who retire but don't quit working. So I'm thinking about people who either take lower paying jobs or volunteer because they believe in some sort of business or mission that a person has. For instance, I've known several people who were teachers who get their retirement stipend after 30 years of service and have gone to serve various organizations. If you look at Virginia Mennonite Missions in Harrisonburg, there's several people on staff who are in their second career, and they're getting paid a fraction of what they got when they were paid as teachers. And teachers aren't paid especially well, but they took a pay cut because they don't need the money. They believe in the mission of the organization. If you go down the road here to Valley Mission, you're going to find people that are working without getting paid. These are people who have retired and they've saved up enough grain, enough money. Their barns are big enough to hold what they need. And they're saying, I'm going to go and help other people with my time. The story of the rich fool, he never even considers how he's going to help other people. He never says, hey, I'm going to give some of my grain away to help people who have no grain. He never says, now I can invest my time helping at the Valley Mission or at Virginia Mennonite Missions. Now I can invest, you know, volunteering in the school system, whatever it might be. He's always thinking about himself, selfishness, and greed. The next thing that I would lift up about this passage is ingratitude. Now, I never thought about it this way until I was reading through a commentary on this story. And the commentator pointed out that nowhere in this passage does it say that the farmer did anything different. He didn't do anything different to warrant this bumper crop. He didn't make it rain, did he? Did he make it rain? No, he didn't make it rain. Did he go out and select special seed or fertilizer? It doesn't say anything about that. He's not out there hoeing his field anymore. All we see is that he had this bumper crop. But he never gives thanks to God. We can also assume that he had some helpers, some workers, because you don't bring in a harvest that's big enough to supply yourself with food for the rest of your life without having some employees. And in the middle of harvest, he's also tearing down barns and building bigger ones. He didn't do that on his own. Like, harvest time is one of the busiest times of the year for the farmer. You don't have time just to build a barn. So he's not alone in this endeavor. But he never stops to give thanks to God for the bumper crop or to his employees who have helped. Never does he say, hey, here's an extra bonus for you for all your hard work this year because you had more work because of this harvest. It's all about himself. Now, one of the things that I realize that I struggle with in my own life is my prayer life. I won't lie to you. Sometimes it's a challenge. I don't spend as much time in prayer as I should. I'm working on it, and I'm sure that many of you can relate to that as well. But one thing that we always do in our family is before we sit down to any meal, we sit down and we have our time of prayer. We give thanks for the meal. So we sit down like this family here, and usually we hold hands. And it's funny because we just have this routine. We sit down before the food goes to our mouth. Kids are over there grabbing hands, trying to hold hands with mom and dad. They know that if they want to start eating, they have to say their prayers. And we can get a little bit pushback on this. I know it becomes almost too routine, too perfunctory. We just do it because we do it. But I think it's also a really good practice because it slows us down. We can get into such a habit of thinking about all that we've done. And I'll speak about myself, and you can probably apply this to your life as well. We so quickly think about, hey, you know, I've worked this job, so I have some money. And because I worked this job and have money, I went to the grocery store and I bought these groceries. And then whenever I got those groceries, I came home and I made a meal plan for the week. And I had that meal plan in place, so I cooked this food. And then whenever we're done eating all this food, I am going to go and do the dishes. Does that sound familiar? It's all about what I've done. But by slowing down and giving thanks, it's a reminder that we did not make that grain grow. And we did not make that thing that became our food or the thing that fed the thing that became our food. This was something that God did for us. God gave us the intellect and the body, the physicality to do the work that we did to earn the income. God has blessed us in so many ways that we quickly fast forward it in our lives. If we don't take time to reflect on the things that God has done for us, we become like this rich fool and don't show any gratitude for what God has done. So I believe that each of those things are a part of what this parable is about. There is this critique of selfishness, this critique of ingratitude. And ultimately, I think they both kind of play into my final point for this morning. I think they play into building relationships. Relationships with one another and relationships with God. Now, when I started this passage today, I jumped into the parable. You may have noticed I skipped the introductory material. And we're going to circle back to that now. Because the event that was taking place here, Jesus is walking, he's teaching, he's preaching, and he's approached by these brothers. And one of the brothers comes to Jesus and he says, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Well, that sounded very familiar to what we had down here, wasn't it? Tell my brother to give me some lifesavers. Now, the thing about this event is, if this is actually an inheritance, if this guy's parents have passed away, Deuteronomy 21:15-17 lays out very clearly the inheritance law in the Jewish system. It would have been the practice for the oldest brother to get a double portion of the inheritance. So if you got one, let's go John Willis and Leland. If John Willis got one lifesaver, Leland, you would get two. It's in the Bible. So it's very clearly laid out. Whether we think it's just or right today, that would have been the system that they were born into. But we don't know what's going on, like which brother is actually complaining here. We don't know if the older brother is withholding the younger brother's portion of his inheritance. Or is it maybe the younger brother saying, hey, that's not fair. I need 50%. So here's Jesus' response. Jesus refused to enter into this conversation. He refuses to be triangulated. He says this, and I always say he talks jive in this passage. He says, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist of an abundance of possessions. Now, I don't know in this passage, like, which brother is the one being greedy? Is it the younger brother? Is it the older brother? Maybe it's both. But I think the point is still the same. This greed is driving these brothers apart. So I think that what we need to see in this passage is that time and time again, that Jesus is calling us to emphasize relationships over possessions. And too often this is exactly the opposite of what we do in our world today. We emphasize things. We want stuff. We want, you know, those rich guys that I put up there. I knew who they were and what they made. You know, we want that new iPhone. We want that Tesla. We want to be able to show off to other people that we are doing well for ourselves. And we often do so at the expense of these relationships. And I often use this phrase, I don't know where it came from, where we as Christians get things mixed up. We use people and love possessions, where we're supposed to use possessions and love people. And I wonder, what if we flip things back around? What if we actually use Jesus as an example? You know, how radical is that? What would the world look like if we valued relationships more than stuff? Well, I think there would be more meals around tables. I think our world would be filled with more campfires and potlucks. This is where you can say amen and get excited. Be more time together and less time on our devices. We'd spend less time shopping online and more time, I see fingers pointed, less time blaming each other. less time shopping online, more time helping the neighbors in need. We might actually know our neighbors' names if we spent time building relationships instead of being focused on our possessions. And I thought about the other day, you know, we all know what Jesus did for a living, right? What was Jesus' job? He was a carpenter. Anybody remember anything he built other than the church? Like, yeah, anybody ever say, man, Jesus made this really fine piece of furniture, curio cabinet. I don't know what curio cabinet is. He made this cabinet, you know, he made this excellent chair or this table, a beautiful thing. Did anybody focus on the sort of things that Jesus had or made or gave to people like that? No, what does the scripture focus on? Who he sat with, who he dined with, who he broke bread with. He sat with these people and made them feel loved, appreciated, and cared for. I want to leave you this morning with a quote from the poet Maya Angelou. And Maya Angelou said, at the end of the day, people won't remember what you said or did, and I would add, what you possess. They will remember how you made them feel. Can we turn the tables and become more like Jesus to emphasize relationships over things? The rich fool is a parable about a guy who was greedy, who didn't show gratitude, and who didn't care about relationships. Jesus calls us to be there for one another, to care for another, to put people first. I think we do well to follow the teaching of Jesus. Join me in prayer. Loving God, we thank you for the challenge, a challenge that is so relevant for us today. Lord, we